This show is brought to you by MeUndies. Go to MeUndies.com and shipping is always free in the U.S. and Canada. And you can save up to $8 a pair with the MeUndies subscription plan. Get the subscription or a single pair and get 20% off of your first order when you go to MeUndies.com/Joey. That's MeUndies.com/Joey. Show is also brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron sends gourmet recipes and all the fresh ingredients you need to make them right to your door. Our listeners get their first two meals for free. Just go to blueapron.com/Joey and start cooking incredible meals at home with Blue Apron. That's blueapron.com/Joey. And the show is brought to you by Onnit.com. Go to Onnit.com and use code word church to get 10% off all of their great optimization products like Alpha Brain and New Mood.
What's up, gentlemen?
Hey.
We were talking about how, I look at you sometimes. I go, yeah, I could tell he lived in New York. And you liked New York? Did you start there?
Yeah, started in New York. I worked at Caroline's Comedy Club, sweeping the floors, answering the phones, just first job out of college, just as a shit job to just get through and pay the bills. And I watched everybody. I saw Chappelle, everybody that was on SNL. Margaret Cho would come in. And, you know, everybody that was coming into New York City was headlining Caroline's. I saw everybody, and I just thought, that looks like fucking fun. So that's how I got into it. Like 4 months later, I tried at Stand Up New York, and then – as soon as I did it the first time, I said, I'm doing that the rest of my life.
It just hooks you.
Yeah.
It just hooks you. It's just like a silent addiction.
Yeah.
That you don't really even feel. And you're like, wait a second, I like doing this. And then they tell you about the life that you're about to go into. That's the scariest, when they tell you about the life you're about to go into. Well, do you really know what happens? You're like, fuck yeah. You go on the road. You bang women. You're like, no. And then you're like, you know what? I'm still going to go for it. Once you ask and ask and ask.
Yeah.
Because that's what I did. I worked at a comedy club, and I just asked the headliner and the feature and the MC. Asked them, you know, for 8 weeks. I was such a pussy. I would not get on stage. I would just keep asking. Every new Tuesday, I would become friends with them or bring them weed. What's it like? And, you know, they would tell me, well, you know, it's kind of rough. And, we're, you know, some nights we sleep in our car. And, you know, at first you're like, fuck it, I could do it. You know what I'm saying? Fuck the car. Well, some nights you got to shit. You know, it was just crazy what they would tell me. You know,
yeah.
So. How many people working at comedy clubs do you think want to be comedians? Like the door guys, servers? Because I never look at those people and think, oh, those are the next comics. I just figured it was a job people got for a job. But it seems like it's a lot of comics.
I think it's like 70-30. 70 are there to work, and then 30%, I think, end up becoming entranced or wanting to do it or are there to be comics. Like, you go to La Jolla, it's like the whole staff is comics. But you go to, like, you know, anywhere else in the country, like an improv, I think, like, the door guy, sometimes the sound guy, they want to do stand-up. But most of the waitresses, they're just there to pay their bills. I don't know. That's what I think. But
we were doing a podcast a few weeks ago, and I actually went home. I told how I kind of got into it, and I went home and really thought about it. And I went, like, tried to find that movie, and I couldn't find it. Punchline with Sally Struthers and Tom Hanks. Like, I always knew I wanted to do it, but once I saw that movie, that pushed me over.
Yeah,
I made some calls and I stalled for a while. Then I saw a stand-up class in the paper, but it was so weird how in Colorado you have, if you live in the Denver Boulder area. Listen, the truth is, or the matter, I'm telling you, this is honest, there's 4 cold weeks a year. The 2 weeks before the new year and the first 2 weeks of January. After that, you're pretty much done. Those are the only 2 weeks, 4 weeks that we would have to cancel work as roofers when I estimated. I would estimate, but the crews couldn't work. There was either snow or it was windy or it was icy or something like that. And I would stay home and rent movies. And that was one of the movies. Thank God for that fucking snowstorm. You know what I'm saying? And I watched that movie. And it just blew my mind. Like, I had never, my mom had a bar, but I had never dreamt of having a locker at a comedy club.
Right, know? Right, yeah.
Did you pick that movie for a reason? Or you just were like at a video store and
I was
picked
at a video
up?
Store. I was at a video store looking for stand-up shows. And I saw that movie about stand-up with Tom Hanks. I liked Tom Hanks. I picked it up. And it blew me away. I mean, Damon Wayans is in it. Angel Salazar's in it.
Yeah.
Sally, what's her name?
Sally Fields.
Sally Fields is in it. It's just a great flick. You know, the comedy club owner is so cheesy in that.
Yeah.
You know, it's your night, baby. You know what I'm saying? Remember me, 10%. Like he was trying to be a manager. Like that whole it just really sparks your curiosity. You're like, fuck work.
Yeah.
Fuck insurance. Insurance is for pussies. Shit, I pulled out my own tooth last month and shit. I don't need no fucking dentist. Oh, my God. Just thinking about it gives me an ulcer.
Where was your first time? When did you get up?
1991 at the Denver Comedy Works on a Tuesday open mic night.
I mean, what better club than that? That's a
no idea what was going on, Steve Byrne. Yeah. No idea. I read Judy Carter workbook.
Yeah.
And I had done the fucking 3 weeks at the at the class.
Yeah. Did you learn anything from the class?
Confidence.
Yeah.
The guy pulled me aside and said, you know what, man? If you could do this.
Mm-hmm.
He was a Long Island guy. And no. He was part of an improv troupe. Harms, Jeff Harms. That mm-hmm. was this comic's name. And he was part of an improv with Matt Woods, Matt Berry. Matt Berry is huge in Hollywood today. If you IMDb Matt Berry, Matt mm-hmm. Berry's been here for 20 years. Just ripping people's heads off as a showrunner, executive producer. You know, he's been on TV with 20 different fucking shows.
Right.
But those guys were the rumors. The rumors were, when I was coming up, that they had written the act for Roseanne, the one that she brought out here.
Right.
Denver has always been a den for great writers.
Mm-hmm.
They drink, whatever. I don't know what the fuck, but one thing for sure, like Roger Rittenhouse and Steve McGrew and all those guys used to live together. Rick Kearns, who is now a huge writer for Ron White and those guys. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, how many shows has he been on?
He's been on a bunch, but nothing. It wasn't like a lot of. I don't think they maybe put stand-up stuff on there because I didn't see that on his IMDb.
No. I'm talking about TV shows that he's executive produced and show run. Matt Berry had like 19 shows.
Mm-hmm.
Like I walked through one of the lots one day and saw his name painted on one of the things. And I was like, God damn. When they paint your own parking spot, like close to the door.
Like, I got a weird actor for him, so I'll look for another.
That's okay. It's just so that was those guys were the guys that I watched and said, all right.
Yeah.
But it was weird. I got on stage, I had a day job, like I left there floating on ice, but then by the time I got to the car, I said, it's a pipe dream.
Yeah.
You know, who the fuck am I? I'm a fucking piece of shit. I fucking estimate roofs. I smoke blow. I can't do that shit. Exceptional people do that shit.
Yeah.
Then I started reading books. By that time, I knew Richard Pryor lit himself on fire, so I had half a chance. You know, once somebody lights themselves
on
fire,
I'm capable of that.
I could do it. Yeah. I could do it. He lived, you know, you just... These comics, when I was growing up, you know, Freddie Prinze killed himself.
Yeah.
Freddie Prinze was fucking hugely. It's hard to sell Freddie Prinze unless you live through it. Like, Freddie Prinze was a regular guy. He was on Chico and the Man, and it was over. It was over, Lee. And he used to walk around that comedy store and shoot guns in the back of the comedy store and shit. And one day he couldn't take it, he shot himself, and that was the end. He had the show after Sanford and Son. So everybody watched it. But the beauty about this kid, he was Puerto Rican, and Johnny Carson was putting him on the panel, and the air was he was going to replace Johnny Carson. I mean, he was just a personable guy. If you listen to one of his stand-up routines today, you're like, guys, go fuck yourselves. This guy's terrible. That's how. See if you can find an old stand-up routine of Freddie Prinze. Just see it, Lee. You'll die. I bought a CD once. I was all excited.
Yeah.
I bought it like at like one of those places in Texas. I was on the road. I had like a 4-hour drive. I'm like, fucking Freddie Prinze.
Yeah.
This guy was my hero growing up. I threw it. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I almost went off a fucking cliff.
Can I tell you, I introduced Martin Lawrence at the store maybe like a few months ago. And I thought, fucking, hey, Martin Lawrence. Holy shit. Because I used to work at a video store in college where we would deliver the videos to your dorm room.
So no way.
It was called Video 101 at Kent State. So I watched and I would get all the movie posters. So I had this Martin Lawrence "You So Crazy" poster, and I watched the video all the time. And I must have watched that thing 100 times in college. I fucking loved it. And then I brought him up, and I was like, "Fuck, I should go back and watch that now." I haven't seen it forever, probably since I was in college, and I wasn't even thinking of doing stand up then. Put it in, watch it. I was like, "This is the fucking oh my god!"
What was I thinking?
God,
Here, let's see what this guy's got. 1970, whatever.
74.
Thank you. I'm not originally from L.A. I come from New York. I'm one of the New York Puerto Ricans. And, well, not really, not completely, because my father's Hungarian. So I'm a Hungarican. That's why I know I don't look it, right? I got light skin, straight hair. That's from my father. From my Puerto Rican mother, I got my nose and my mustache. I grew up in New York in a neighbor called Washington Heights. It's not really a ghetto. It's a ghetto suburb, right? Slums with trees. Right? Even the birds are junkies. Birds don't know how to fly. They just fall out of trees and bother people. Tweet, tweet, sucker, give me a quarter. Cockroaches wear sneakers and dungarees. Cockroaches are strong. You can't kill them. You ever notice? You step on them, you hear them snap. As soon as you lift your foot, they run like hell. That's because they know we believe the snap means they're dead, so they're going, chump, and they're gone.
Not bad, though.
The manager of the apartment building.
Good-looking dude. Yeah.
His name is Mr. Rivera, Puerto Rican guy.
And so that's what's his name's right? Dad, Lee. You know that, right?
Freddie Prinze Jr., yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, all right. You put it together. I didn't know.
That's great. He looks like the dude from Scarface. Or was he in Scarface?
Freddie Prinze. No, he was dead by then.
That's crazy. Yeah, he looks like his friend, doesn't he? Or maybe I'm thinking of a different movie.
It's crazy because the night I still remember the night he shot himself. I was by the high school. I still wasn't in high school. I was still in fucking grammar school. And it was freezing out. Mm-hmm. It was one of those nights I made a mistake, Jack. And at a certain time in those days, the buses went out of service.
Oh,
so if you cut yourself up there at 11:05,
yeah.
you were dead. You know, you were fucking freezing.
Yeah.
And I walked home. I'll never forget. I cut through the cemetery and I had to take a shit. I'm like, Jesus Christ, this could only happen to me. I eat like bad pizza or something like that. And the kid I'm with, I'm like, walk ahead of me, but stay close. Because the rumor was there was devil worshippers in the cemetery at night. So I like just pulled my pants halfway down and just, you know, I was very Catholic at the time. I was very respectful. I looked for a grave that was very old. Like that, even his family wasn't around. You know?
Yeah.
And they had them. They had graves there from 1892 and shit. So I was like, shit here. These people are dead. You know, even the cousins are dead. And I took a shit, and when I pulled my pants on, I left my pants on, and I peed in the pants. I'll never forget this. I peed in the pants, and it was so cold out that the pants froze.
Oh, fuck.
And I had to walk home, like, with shingles, piss shingles,
oh.
that were falling off my little fucking pants. Like, that's my memory of Freddie Prinze, man.
Taking a shit in a cemetery?
In a cemetery on a fucking cold January night or something.
Why did he pee your pants? It was just by accident?
No, because it was so cold. I left the pants in case the devil worshippers came. I only shit, but I left my dick in the pants. So I'm looking around for devil worshippers, not knowing that I'm peeing. And when you shit, you automatically pee. Right or wrong? I don't know. Nobody just shits and just
I've never
shit.
Shat outside before. <or something. laughs> That's fucking crazy.
Listen, man.
You're right, though. It is a double whammy. You can't do one without
or the other. Yeah. Think about
like
it.
Like, you can just pee.
Right.
It's fine. But when it's a deuce, you're getting the kit and caboodle.
Yeah. You do the whole, and you pee, and then you flush, and then you pee and shit again. You know, when I'm there, it's like three or four little flushes and looksies and the whole thing. But you pee in between all those. You're like, how was I holding all this pee? How the fuck was I holding all this pee? You ever pee for like 10 minutes and you're like, where is this shit coming from?
Yeah.
Oh, that's my favorite part of waking up in the morning. It's like the little long ass pees.
And what do you motherfuckers, both of you, get older when you got to get up three times a night? Like, you got to stop drinking on a 2 hour, those two show nights?
Yeah.
You got to stop. You got to do the second show like dehydrating, like you're in Biafra with Africans chasing you and shit. Like, because if not, once you turn 50, you'll be up three times peeing.
Yeah,
I didn't get it for a long time. I'd get like a venti coffee at like midnight.
Yeah.
I'd be peeing till 6 in the fucking morning every hour on the hour. You're like, fuck. You got to take the sleep apnea mask off and fucking walk and pee and come back and put it on. Oh, when you get older, guys, it really is a nightmare. The fucking pee thing becomes a fucking nightmare, though.
Yeah.
At like four, how old are you now? 42?
41?
Yeah, 48. You start peeing like a motherfucker. You're like, I got to watch my water intake. Then you go to the doctor and get blood, and they're like, you know, you're a little dehydrated. Sure, I'm fucking dehydrated. I can't drink nothing.
I want to sleep.
Oh, you can't. Dog, when I leave my house in Studio City in the morning, right here, whatever the fuck I live, right here, by the time I get to Waxless, I got to pee. Like, by the time I get to 101, I get off that Cahuenga exit, I'm looking for a bathroom. Sometimes you find one, sometimes you don't. You do what you need to do. You go behind a 7-Eleven. I swear to God, I got to pee all the fucking time.
Well, I used to do that in Boston, like pee in, like on the street, but I don't do. I'm always too scared to do it out here.
Well, it's the body language. You could just stand there and make believe you're talking on the phone, be peeing, and nobody would know.
What do you do with a growing puddle by your feet?
You fix them between two cars and make believe like one of the cars is yours. You just touch the paint like you love it. Like, oh my God, look at this paint job. It's like a magician. People are looking at you petting the car. They don't see you peeing. I do it all the time, man. I pee at Ralph's. I have to. I'm old, bro. I don't have time to go in and pee. I'll just open the door and make believe I'm on the cell phone. I'm looking for something. And the whole time, the fucking drive from the house to the airport, oh, once I park in Terminal 4 for American Airlines, I don't even wait. Right there. As I'm pulling the luggage out, my dick's out. I'm just making believe. I'm peeing on my sneakers. I don't care. I don't really, at this point, that little drive from the house to the airport, it's not a little drive, but you guys know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
What do you do on long flights? Because I always pick.
I get up and pee.
Oh, I'm a big. Even when I was bigger, I always picked the window because I hated getting up on that shit.
No, so, I get up. I didn't know this for years that you have to have water with you the whole flight. Did you know that? I didn't know this. I just saw this.
Yeah,
about
you
got to
stay hydrated.
Ago.
Yeah.
The whole flight, you got to have water next to you. You have to be drinking. I forget what they're going to do. 4 ounces every fucking hour. It's something crazy on a plane. Because there's some type of radiation. I don't know it. I can't break it down for the people at home. I'm just telling you that once I started drinking water on a plane, everything changed. Like, soda's not healthy on a plane. Alcohol's even worse, they say. You know, for 20 years, I did everything on a plane. I started blow on a plane. You know, I smoked pot one time. Dog, and in 84, I smoked dope on a plane with a soldier.
Really?
That I just come back from some country. He wasn't even like a fighter or something. We took a flight from San Francisco together. He's like, man, I got to go for a reefer. I go, Doug, I got a bowl right in my fucking pocket. A lighter and some weed. Went to the back of the plane and started smoking weed like animals. Because in those days,
you could
smoke cigarettes.
But that's when I get on a plane, I see that metal ashtray. I'm like, oh, this fucking plane's going down. I haven't been on a plane forever.
That's US Air.
That's
US Air always got people smoking on there. They got the air things for lungs, people who had cancer and got on the planes. US Air, those fucking planes are ratty, dog. How they're still up there and not going down is beyond me. Every time I get a call to go to Philly, you only got to take US Air twice a year.
Yeah.
Philly and some other fucking place. That's it. I think I'm not even going to Philly that route no more.
Yeah.
I'm just going to LA, JKA, whatever the fuck it is. What is it? Kennedy?
JFK?
JFK, JKA. Whatever the fuck it is. I'll rent a car and drive to Philly. Those U.S. airplanes, they're going to start going down any fucking day now.
Is it like one of the propeller ones?
I don't even know what the fuck it is, dog. I know that you hear animals and shit. I know that American Airlines bought them, and they ain't fucking, they ain't sparking no. Every time you take off on a U.S. air flight, the thing fucking rattles like the brothers fucking took that air up into the. It rattles, man.
It's like Soul Plane.
It really fucking rattles. I'm not trying to be cute or funny here. I'm waiting for USA to start dropping out of the fucking sky. Every time I watch, that's another thing. 6:30, I don't want nobody bothering me because that's my world news tonight. For years,
ABC?
I had Diane Sawyer. They broke my heart. They fucking had got rid of her because she started getting liver spots. So they they replaced her with whatever his name is, who I like. He's very good. But I always watch it. And every night lately, the last fucking couple months, 3 nights a week, they always talk about a flight prop. And I'm sitting there pulling for USA. It's got to be USA. And then they throw you off at like American or Southwest or some shit.
I can't believe people get like in fights on planes. Didn't it just happen a couple times recently? People getting like huge, and they have to divert something. I think in the last week.
Dog, they do not fuck around on flights no more. I tell you what, I told you, Jody Furtick got drunk with 4 or 5 dudes in San Francisco. They got on the plane. One of them grabbed her pussy. She broke his nose.
What?
They arrested everybody. They arrested the 5 dudes and Jody Furtick. Everybody got yanked off the plane in fucking handcuffs. They don't fuck around on planes.
Yeah.
I had a problem on a plane once, twice I had a problem on that plane. When that plane landed, the cops were there fucking waiting. They come right on the plane and they sit next to you and they go, we got to take care of something. And they talk to you. They don't fuck around at all. There's zero tolerance. Ralphie May's not allowed on United for kicking the counter because he missed his flight. Like that 55-minute window thing?
Yeah.
Like they make you...
They should have given him a medal because I can't see him getting his foot above anything that... You know.
Well, he kicked the counter low. You know what I'm saying? It was like an inch off the thing. He just kicked it like... And he... It wasn't even like something malicious or nothing.
Yeah, he's just banned.
It was like going, fuck.
Right.
You know, what am I going to tell the club? Like one of those. And all of a sudden, two cops came and escorted him out. And he's not allowed in the United Terminal.
That's crazy.
If they don't, dog, they do not play. That's why at airports, I put my iPod on. I don't even listen to people.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk to nobody because what happens if you snap? The next thing you know, you're in a fucking Russian jail with watching Midnight Express. You ever seen Midnight Express?
Yeah. Well, I got on a plane. I'm in the exit row. Pull the hat down against the window. I'm out like a light. Wake me if you need a hero. That's it. I'm done.
Every flight?
Every flight. I fall asleep. I don't know what it does, but the minute we go up in the air, I guess maybe the lack of oxygen, I'm out.
God bless you.
I always sleep. I
wish I could fucking pass out of planes like the old days.
Do you have to take a sleeping pill or are you just out?
I'm just out.
He's one of those dudes.
No. I'm not like Mr. T where I need to drink the spike the milk and I'm fucking, no, I'm just, I get against the window and sometimes even they're like, yeah, you got an upgrade to the first class. I'm like, I don't need it. I'm going to be asleep here in 2 minutes. I feel maybe it's even like conditioned where I get on the plane. I feel like, oh, I can sleep now.
That's crazy. Maybe it's a skinny thing. I always used to be jealous of the girls who could lay down on their tray table and fall asleep. Maybe it was just when I was big. I couldn't like get comfortable in the seat. It's tough.
On what seat?
In any airplane seat.
Oh, like, in any seat?
Oh, my God. When I was at my biggest... I was on a Virgin plane and like I kept going over the seat rest and it's uncomfortable and then you're uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It's tough being big on a plane. It's like it's obviously tough for everyone around you, but it's like that's one of the worst things about being big is getting on a plane. Like that's why I always sat in the window for other people. So they wouldn't get
what a sweet
so I wouldn't have to jump. No, well it's not even me being sweet. It's me being
just
embarrassed.
Just take the compliment.
Like
you're a sweet young man.
I'm very sweet, but I don't wanna step like I would be embarrassed to step over something. Like, I can't make – like, you know when you're a kid and you're jumping over, like, fences or whatever?
Yeah.
I've never once jumped over anything. I don't – like, I would always trip on that stuff. I have, like, the shortest legs in the world. I can't reach over anybody. So I just sit in the corner and I would never get up on a plane.
What a sweet, lonely young man you are. I'm sorry.
I never jumped a fence either. Every time I jumped a fence, I got caught, too. I don't even think I ripped my hand. I was not a good fence jumper. You got to have a different type of fucking – and I was – thin and I couldn't jump a fence. I didn't do it for my first pull-up. I was like fucking 20. I just had no strength in my arms. I had to lift weights and do 1,000 fucking push-ups. I couldn't do a pull-up. I never got the patch from the President's Fitness. I had to con the gym teacher, you know what I'm saying? Give him like a fan and bring him a hot dog and shit to get a fucking patch from the President. I could do push-ups, sit-ups, squats, high jump, long jump. I could do everything. I just couldn't. Something about my hands.
What is it about it when you're young that you can do like 1,000 push-ups as a little kid, but then when you get older, like why don't your arms like stay just as strong? Like little kids can do like hundreds of push-ups.
What am I, Nick at Night? You got to fucking, you know what I'm saying? I don't know why you're strong.
You might be Nick at Night.
My fucking wife drops my daughter off at 8:30 in the morning. She runs around until 5:45. My wife picks her up for the Valentine dance. She sent me the videos. It was basically her running around for an hour and a half. That's 8 hours, 9 hours of fucking running around. Then they get home and they put heels on and dresses and they fucking make cakes and, you know, you got to play games with them. The fucking game you gave her, the Light Bright. Last night I'm over there putting fucking off on it and shit and building it with her. You know, it never ends. The energy is fucking endless. Who knows? Listen, man, I grew up in a time when you left your house at 8 a.m. You didn't go back in for dinner, homework, and then you ran around until 10. When I first came from Cuba, there was so much trust on the streets that kids, you had 12 kids on a fucking street that knew each other from the ages of 6 to 12. Everybody played together. Everybody played together.
Yeah.
You played everything. Stickball, two-hand touch football. Okay, let's go and eat. Then you come back, let's go look at the dead body over on Chandler that just got stabbed. Then you go look at him. That's a mile walk. It's a fucking mile walk that you did in 3 minutes flat. You know?
And you weren't tired after it.
Nothing.
Either.
I used to walk the Two Guys. When I was a kid, I lived on 38th
Two Street. Guys.
Two Guys was on fucking 15th Street.
What's Two Guys?
Two Guys is like this Walmart.
Sears or, yeah.
Yeah, Walmart in 1970s, before TVs, whatever. And me and these guys used to walk it, but it was one of those hills that it was like this, but for 20 minutes. You can't do that today.
No.
Nobody could do that today.
Nobody could do that.
We'd do that shit twice a day. We'd walk the Two Guys. You know, like you went and bought a basketball, and or you went and bought a bike tire, and the bike and the tube didn't work. How do you think you got back there? You took a cab, or you think they had an Uber? You walked back with your bike like a half a fucking Momo, like a soldier. Then you had to fix it there, bring it back. Then you realize you forgot the pin for the basketball. So now you got to ride the bike back over there. You know, that was, you did that three, four fucking, I grew up in the second hilliest city in the country. Did you know that? Northburg in New Jersey is the second hilliest hill in the country. It's right over the Lincoln Tunnel.
Yeah.
Right when you get off the Route 3. That's Northburg. Second most hilliest in San Francisco. You don't know what I went through as a kid. That's why I'll never die.
Yeah.
Because I got a heart of a fucking tank. You know what I'm saying? You know how many times I walked up that hill for fucking iced teas and Chinese rice and, you know how many fucking ideas in the winter? How many times? You had to walk it for breakfast to go to the high school. Then if you wanted to go out and get sicky, nicky, sucky, you had to fucking walk it again at night, dog. You know.
And don't talk to him about taking a shit in a graveyard.
Yeah.
You don't want to know because there's no pisser.
I still
You got to piss your pants.
I still remember it being spring in New York. And I had to be a junior in high school. And me and Didi Quintero sitting in the cemetery with no shirts on, doing coke and drinking an 8-pack of Nips.
In the daytime?
In the daytime. Like fucking 3:30 in the afternoon. I still remember that plane in that same cemetery.
Yeah.
Because we learned that cemetery took a half hour off your travel time. It really did. 30 to 40 minutes off your travel time.
Yeah.
You cut from 68th Street and you came out on 41st Street.
Was it something like that? Everyone in the town, all the kids like taught each other, like that you learned from like maybe the third graders, or you just found it out yourself? Like, because I had stuff like that. Like, your older grades would tell the younger grades about it. Or were you just, I mean, I can't even imagine walking through a cemetery.
If you ever go to Jersey, it's a 34-3-quarter. What's the fucking math equation here, Steve Byrne? You're a little high and shit. If you have 3/4 or something, what's left? A quarter.
Right.
So a quarter of New Jersey is fucking cemeteries. If you've been to fucking New Jersey.
So cut through the cemetery.
A quarter of New Jersey is cemeteries. And I'm talking about huge fucking cemeteries. You know, we had Weehawken Cemetery. I mean, 3 blocks from my house. That's where my mother's buried. Weehawken Cemetery is 3 blocks from my house. It's Weehawken. It's not Weehawken, New Jersey.
There are a lot more cemeteries back east. Why aren't there any here? Why are they out here?
They throw them in the fucking beach. I don't know. They bury them on the 170. I don't fucking know what they do with these people. They send them back to Mexico. Who the fuck knows?
You fly into JFK or LaGuardia, there's always that huge cemetery as you're descending. You're like, this is not a good – you shouldn't see it this before you're landing. It's like, do I need to see a bunch of tombstones?
What about that scene from The Sopranos where they're doing – they have a funeral and it's like underneath the underpass, the highway underpass?
Yeah.
Like underneath like 6 or 7 highway underpasses is a cemetery.
I told you that. Cemeteries everywhere. What are you going to do with them? What would you want to build the fucking highway on a cemetery? Nobody's going to complain. If they build it over a fucking neighborhood, people are going to say, what the fuck cars are doing 150 past my house all fucking day? A cemetery, nobody gives. I'm telling you, New Jersey is a quarter of that state is cemeteries. I don't know why. Then you take it like out of New York City, New York State, like Schenectady and all those places, Albany. They're a quarter fucking cemetery too. And I guarantee Boston, there's no fucking party either.
Oh, but did you guys ever stop when you were driving around the Northeast and just go to those cemeteries? When I went to that wedding a couple of years ago, I went to a cemetery in Vermont. It was like you were talking about, they had like 1,600 headstones. It's so cool.
Explain something.
Like, where do you get buried if you die in Arizona? Do they have cemeteries in? Because it's a desert climate. Are they?
Maybe they have those, like the where you get
the
stacked
above ground.
Up.
Yeah,
yeah, those freak me out. Though. I don't want.
I mean, I'm sure that they dig in the desert, but I would think that the soil's harder. I have no idea what the fuck I'm talking about. I don't know where you get buried in Arizona. That's my point.
Why are you planning on dying in Arizona? When people usually live and die in L.A., you want to go to Arizona, cocksucker?
Yeah, I'll die doing the Tempe Improv. That'll be, be my swan
the
song.
The spirit of Danny Murray comes and gets you. Yeah. That's it's funny that we share the office here with the funeral people.
Come on.
Well, yeah, from across
the, people?
The across the street.
Not this, not our office, not this but this office. Building.
Jesus Christ.
It's like they came in during the day.
It's morbid.
I grew up with a kid who had a funeral parlor. Steve Byrne. It was like, you have no idea.
Yeah.
And he was cool as fuck. I started hanging out with him when I was about 15.
Yeah.
You know, his parents had money, so they'd leave him. They'd leave for 3 months at a time. And this motherfucker would have to do the little menial tasks, you know, of picking up bodies, dropping them off.
Oh, God. How old is he?
Now he's my age. Now he's a big shot. But, I mean, and he still has the funeral parlor. He's doing busier than ever.
Yeah.
But in those days, I hung out with him. And there was a lot of nights he'd say, what are you doing tonight? Can you put a suit on? I need an usher, you know, and I'd have to, you have to keep the sinks clean, and you have to take the garbage out, and you have to, you know, fucking, and I mean, it was crazy. On the other side, we also had big time parties there. You have no fucking idea.
At a funeral home?
Oh my God, late nights after we'd be at a bar 3 a.m, nobody, what do you want to do? Let's take them back to the funeral home. I can't. What the fuck are you talking about? You can't. Your father's in Florida. Come
That's
on.
A tough sell to a girl. Right?
Oh, please. They love it.
When you really?
Take, oh, you show them the caskets and shit. I know for a fact this guy banged maybe 8 chicks in caskets.
Oh, God. That's fucking
in caskets.
Chicks love that shit, dog. They get banged in a casket. Oh, my God.
Hey, you find the girl with the Marilyn Manson t-shirt. You're like, hey, get over here. I think I know you at a party tonight.
Do you close the top or use it all open?
I don't know. I never asked.
That's freaky if that. They close the top.
No, I don't think you could breathe. You close the fucking top, right?
Do you like Tim Burton movies?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Oh, my God. That was our, from the age of like maybe 18 to 20, that was my headquarters.
What?
His funeral parlor. Because I was, there was a bar next to it called Lucci's. And Lucci's was where it went down. Nothing my friend hated more than that bar next to it, Lucci's.
Yeah.
Because all his customers, you know, this kid always thought he was higher than everybody. And here's his neighbor, the Bar Lucci's. They're throwing darts. They're doing blow. They're having fist fights in there.
Yeah.
So it was convenient because if you're in the funeral parlor, you go there, do a blast, and get a cocktail, and then come back to the funeral like nothing happened. I mean, this was crazy shit. This is crazy shit. But I still remember him and I were going to see Michael Jackson at the Meadowlands for the Victory Tour. And he goes, dog, I'm in a bind. We got to take a ride to Kennedy to pick up a body that's coming from Florida.
Good God.
I said, I'll do it on one condition. We stop in Harlem, get a couple bags of weed. Done. We get in the fucking car. We shoot over there. We get the reefer. We go to JFK, get the body, drive back. I'll never forget this. We fucking pull in. And what you do is those things that they come the body on, it's usually a one-man thing.
Yeah.
Those gurneys, because all you got to do is pull it, and the legs pop out. And this guy, as he comes out, the bottom legs pop out. So all you have to do is just... So I ran out of the car because I had to call a girl. I'll never forget this. And I went into the embalming room, and there was a phone there. I mean, this is how natural it was.
Yeah.
I went into the embalming room, and I picked up the phone, and I called this girl, and I'm like, we'll pick you up at like 6:30, blah, blah, blah. And I'll never forget that I look over, and he's like, die. And he threw the body at me.
What?
And the body was on the thing, like, this is like running on the wheels. And it fucking, I moved out of the way and it hit the wall, and all of a sudden the mouth went. And I fucking dropped the Steve Byrne. Who had more fun than me growing up, Steve Byrne? Who the fuck hangs out with a stiff fucking Wrangler?
Was there, I mean, did he ever think that there were, like, were there haunted spells or were there, like, kind of ghostly spirit or entities that ever happen at the funeral home? Or
not one time.
Not once?
He was one. He's still one of my best friends. I mean, now he's just really busy and, you know, I mean, I took him to the longest yard premiere. I mean, that's how tight I am with him. I mean, he's my brother, you know.
Yeah.
But that was, and but then this is where it used to get funny. We used to get fucked up. We used to get fucked up. This was
dead people in the basement still?
This is, oh yeah, we used to get fucked. But no, this was way before. I mean, we used to have a blast with him. Growing up, he was really a fun guy. Because if his pager went off, I mean, he had to pick up a body. He would have like 3 pages. And if one pager particularly went off, but once he had a couple in him, we'd just take the pager from him. You know what I'm saying? Like, once he'd have a couple of fucking cocktails going, we take the pager from him, and then we'd get home, and his dad would be waiting for him. Where the fuck you been? There's two bodies in Newark Airport. Shit. You're out fucking dilly-dallying. Get in the fucking car. And we'd be gacked, fucked up out of our minds. And he'd tell me, you got to take the ride with me. Are you fucking kidding me?
You stole the beeper.
So three of us would have to get in the car and take a ride out and pick up bodies. Because we were going to drop the bodies off and go get another package. I mean, that's how crazy we were at that age. But there was a lot of nights where we would still be up at 8 and he'd have a funeral.
Oh, God.
Okay, so he'd drop us off and we'd get in whatever car we had and we'd wait 10 minutes and we'd go by the funeral parlor and he'd have the cones in front of the funeral parlor. He'd be standing there with his suit pale.
Oh, yeah.
You know, his jaw would still be gone. And my friend would step on the fucking gas and knock over his cones. Hilarious. Hilarious.
What is it like being high in a car? And you can hear like the body rattling around and whatever thing it's in, like that metal.
One night, me and him got fucking lit. Oh. And we came and went through Hudson County Park to get to the George Washington Bridge. And it was the beginning of a snowstorm and the car started spinning around.
Oh, Jesus.
We got to fucking stiffen the car. Get him. I mean, these were just times that I wish. There were so many times I wish I had a video camera. Like, it would have been unacceptable, but these are the things that people would never believe. Like, us pulling over in Harlem with a fucking stiffener car and getting a bag of reefer, getting a package. I mean, this is crazy. Like, he wasn't even back there.
Yeah.
Like, it was just a part of doing business. Like, if you wanted to run into the city, I'd take the ride with me to pick up the body. I'll stop.
Fuck.
And then, okay.
Oh, I can't imagine, like, partying with my friends and being like, all right, we got to go pick up a dead body and then we'll come. To be continued. I a dead body would be the end of my night, but it's kind of like, you know, it's like, all right, let's.
There was so many different. When I was in high school, there was a kid named Rob Merlo. His dad had a restaurant called Roberto's or something. And it was the second best, like it was written up, like New York area's best. And he used to cut a deal with us, man. He said, listen, guys, plain and simple. Friday nights you come, you clean the bar, or you could eat whatever you want, booze. So basically, if we went to his restaurant at 12, we take an 8-ball and just drink all night for free after the bar closed.
Oh, wow.
And drink till 6 and then take the car down the shore. That's how crazy we were in high school. We had all these little scams that we could do. What are you going to do for a night, Steve? And I'm like, why? Come with us. We get over there about 2. We would go to Joan Mary's at 10, drink till 3, and then take the car to fucking Mando's. Mando's, that was the name of it. And we'd have to clean. But we cleaned fucking lit. When you're 19 or 20, you don't give a fuck. Because we knew at 7, we were just going to wash our hands and go down the shore for the weekend.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that? And not even going to sleep.
That's crazy.
Now, not even thinking about going to sleep till maybe Sunday late.
You couldn't have done a good job cleaning. And then, like, you cleaned and you took all of his booze. He must have been pissed.
He didn't give a fuck. It was his father's restaurant. He was there with us.
No, but the father must have been pissed.
He didn't know. The father was somewhere. The father owned elevator companies. This was just like his fucking write-off. And the restaurant became like this fucking big deal with write-ups. Every time you went in there, the Knicks were there. Anybody, you know, all those athletes that lived in New Jersey were there, you know. So it was kind of interesting to go in there.
Yeah.
You know what all that shit is.
Yeah.
You were there for 8 years. The reason why I wanted to talk to you, I shot a special in Vegas and it just failed miserably. Give me A to Z. How many specials have you done?
I just finished my fourth.
Fourth. Give me the anatomy of the Steve Byrne special.
The anatomy.
How long to take to write?
For me, 2 years. Because
So you've done 4 specials in 8 years.
Yeah. Well, because of Sullivan and Son, it took me an extra year and a half for the third one. So, yeah. Yeah, about like almost, you know, 8 or 9.
Was it stressful for you? Did you go into it with a different mentality?
Yeah, I think the first one, you know, the first one is a culmination of, oh, I'm okay, thanks, is a culmination of your first few years in stand-up. So you have all these years and you're trying to figure things out and it's just a jumbled mess. And then my second and third one, I started figuring out. But basically what it comes down to is, for me at least, you come up with a thesis. What is it I want to communicate? What is the question that I would like to answer over the course of this hour special? So, for example, the second one was Burn Identity. And it started with me going to China for the Olympics. And everybody there is like, what are you? And it's like, oh, I'm American. But then you come back to America and people are like, oh, what are you? And it's like, oh, I'm Korean and Irish. And I just thought, if I'm American in China and if I'm American in Europe or Ireland, but in America, I'm not American, I'm Korean and Irish, that would be a fun way to explore my identity being Korean and Irish. And so that became the thesis for that, of saying, I'm an American, this, I'm going to prove it, this, that, the other thing, make fun of a bunch of different races. And then this one, I turned 40, I have two kids now, and I didn't want to just have somebody turn on Netflix, for example, and see, oh, this guy's 40 years old and he's talking about being 40. Well, I'm fucking 21. I'm in college. Fuck this guy. I'm going to watch, you know, Aziz or Jeselnik or somebody else. So I thought, why not try to communicate to somebody half my age and give them lessons along with my children? So, you know, you tell the truth, you don't lie. Where's the joke in that? Where's something that's happened to me that's a personal experience that I can parlay that to somebody half my age? So that kind of became the backbone of this new hour.
Do you ever write jokes that you know won't be on the special, or are all of your jokes now?
No. Yeah, I mean, you write them all thinking, okay, this will be a part of it. And I actually had a closer that was really like, really, you know, it got applause breaks all the time. It was fail-proof. It was just great. And I closed on it. And it was until the last month that I thought, you know, you built up all this goodwill. You talk about your family, your daughter, your son, your wife and family. And then I'm doing this dirty sex joke about the analogy between women buying shoes and guys thinking that same way with blowjobs. And it was great. And then I just thought, do I want to end the show like this after talking about my family this whole time? So I just thought I'm going to scrap it and do something a little more meaningful. So I wrote something about a month ago and that became the closing bit. So, but I think everything that I've written will possibly end up on the show, on the special. Yeah.
That's crazy that you said that, because Joey, you had a bit in the where you said a word a couple times, but you said it by mistake earlier and you said, I can't say it there because it's too much. And that, like, I can't imagine, I would never have thought that you would have to think, oh, I've built up all this goodwill. I don't want to have a dirty, like, for you, like Joey, like, you're a dirty comic. You would think, well, you say stuff like that, so you would think you would say it as many times as you wanted. But it's interesting that you have to censor yourself a little bit.
Well, I think just in terms of this particular special, because my last one, I was really dirty at the end. The last like 15 minutes, it's just like a 4th of July Statue of Liberty fireworks finale. I had the whole crowd chanting anal. You know, it's like you got 1,000 people going anal, anal to this poor girl in front who has not received anal. And I'm telling her, honey, it's coming like a full moon. Brace yourself. There's a freight train out there circling this country heading right towards that asshole. So it just, you know, it's like I did that last one. It was so dirty. And then this one, I'm talking about my kids. I'm talking about my wife. I'm talking about my family. I'm talking
and
about
it just wouldn't
my
fit.
Kids.
Yeah.
And yeah, then the last joke just wouldn't fit, because it's not how you start. It's how you finish, especially with these specials. You remember Chris Rock dropping the mic. You remember that last joke. And it's like, I want this special to be remembered in a different light than the other way.
And let's say that was your first special. Would you have made that choice, or would you have just gone with a good joke?
I would have gone with a good joke, yeah. In a heartbeat, yeah. But I think the older I've gotten, it's especially with kids now. With my kid, it's like I always want them to be proud of me. And like, I've got some really dirty jokes. I mean, I remember my first Comedy Central half hour, I'm on all fours doing a doggy style joke, talking about how women just lose the will within 4 minutes and they just drop down and the ass stays popped up, but the heads just bang. So it's banging on the stage and I'm talking, oh my God, your pillow smells like shit. Now here I am banging my stage. My ass is on the air and I look in this crowd and my mom and dad are both looking at me and I'm just like, oh, for fuck's sakes. But it, you know, at the time you're going to do the joke. It kills. And it still did. I love that joke.
My daughter was sitting on my lap yesterday. I'm watching something on the computer with her. We're going through some videos. And I got like this chill in my spine. Mm-hmm. You know, for years, I tried to recircuit myself. Like, try to be a different person. And this mm-hmm. little girl's doing it all by herself. Like, because you're thinking about what you have on YouTube and how in 15 years.
Yeah.
And if you want me to tell you I'm lying to you and I haven't thought about this, you don't know anything about me. Like, I've thought about this.
Yeah.
Something's going to happen one day. She's going to go on YouTube for 2 hours and see some of this shit and go, what the fuck happened? This is not the guy I knew, or I didn't know my dad fucking did this, or he mugged the fag, or he did this, or he, you know, it's just a, it's a big worry of mine. It's a very big worry of mine.
I think it's going to be great.
No, it's not. No, it's not, because I tell you what, man, one of the things I'm very much against is parenting with alcohol or anything like that. I've always felt in my heart, because I grew up with a mom that fucking drank in front of me. She smoked dope in front of me. So I got the, I have the ability to say this shit, that when you see your hero doing something, that's it. That's it. There's no alcohol in my fucking house for a fucking reason. There's no fucking alcohol in my house. Mm-hmm. There's weed on the balcony for now, today. But when she watches me when I go outside, guys.
Yeah.
They ain't fucking stupid. They smell something. They watch when you go outside and come back and why you go outside. And sometimes she bangs to see why I'm outside. You know, if she's not thinking about doing drugs and she sees me smoking on one of these periscopes, you know, there went her hero.
Yeah.
That's how I look at things. I know a bunch of people are going to disagree with me. I know how, that's what it was for me. And I made a fucking analysis of all the kids I grew up with. I have a friend that's crazy. Timmy Holloway. Listens to the podcast still. He's a fucking teamster. And he, one thing about his parents knew we were doing everything. Mm-hmm. But they were saying, this house, you're not going to have a fucking beer.
Yeah.
I respected that. Oh, my God. His grandmother would squash the beers with her hand. The Budweiser.
Crush them on her head.
She'd crush them with her hand. It was hilarious. But in their house, you were not allowed to drink.
Yeah.
Until this day, I really respected that. Even me, and I, you know, 1982, I was doing blow, pills, heroin. I respected that you weren't allowed to drink. So these are the things I'm scared of. Yes. And I know that you don't want to see your daughters talking about doggy style. Jesus fucking Christ, the shit I got on eating ass and sticking fingers in your pussy and picking them up by the hoof. You know, I'm going to need my daughter to see that shit. And that's a reality that, you know, we deal with later. But for right now, from here on in, I'm going to make a conscious decision to maybe watch.
You try to, because even like in the special I just filmed, you know, I have this joke about, you know, this girl in a porn and how she deserves love. And here I am, I'm acting it all out. The girl's getting from behind. She's jerking off guys, blowing guys. And at the end I go, oh my God, this is being filmed. And I feel like years from now, my daughter will be at a lunch table in junior high school with a bunch of her friends around a tablet. And there'll just be a gif of me just like doing all this shit. And girls are like, what's your dad doing? Oh, my dad, he's getting butt fucked and he's blowing guys and jerking them off, but he's working. He's at work. It's like, oh, okay, good. That's what I have there out there in the world. But I'm addressing it, as opposed to like the last special that's on Netflix now was so racial. But I was doing it just before my daughter was born. And I mean, I think I went there and I crossed the line at certain points too. But that's something that also resonated with me, because as my daughter gets older, I don't want her – you know, because everybody can skew it however the way they want it to. Because as a comic, when I talk about race, it's like – it's like where when I grew up in Jersey, I grew up in Pittsburgh, especially in New York City. That's why I filmed the special in New York City, the last one, Champion. It's because you can talk about race freely in New York City because people don't give a shit. They're just like, oh, it's a black guy. Yeah, I don't give a shit. Whereas in Iowa, it's like, oh my God, it's a black guy. You got to watch what you – it's like, no, in New York, anybody can make fun of anybody because you're all jammed in that 14-square-mile island and everybody's there just busting balls, cutting chops, and knowing that – that city is – everybody's got each other's back at the end of the day in New York City, I believe, the time I spent there. So I think when you talk about race these days, it's so, so thin ice, and I don't want my daughter getting older and any of her friends thinking, oh, this guy – her dad's racist or whatever. Just completely the opposite, because I always thought that when you make fun of people, you make fun of the ones you love, and I always thought you can make fun of anybody here.
But no, you're young. I'm sorry, Goldie.
Oh, I was just going to say – I totally agree that I think the problem that a lot of parents have are that they you just think it's bullshit, especially now with the internet. I didn't really grow up with the internet, but now even younger kids must know that weed's okay or something, or dare is kind of bullshit or stuff like that. But it's always the parents who like have like honest conversations that the kids turn out the best. So now it'll be embarrassing for them when they're young, but every kid is embarrassed of their parents in middle school. Like you guys are going to be the cool fucking dads. It's going to be embarrassing from like 8 to 16 or something. But after that, you're going to be cool.
Especially like Joey, you know, with everything he's done and it just being so such an open, honest book, I think it's just like as a dad and especially as a comic, you know, just for me speaking, it's just like we've seen everything. Like there's no party you're going to go to that's better than any party we've been to. There's no body you're going to hang out with that's cooler than anybody we hung out with. So whatever it is you're doing as a kid, it's like go ahead and do it. Have fun. But listen to me. I've seen it all. So really take this in. That's something I want permeated in my daughter's head. It's like, listen to me. I'm telling you this. It's up to you to make your own decisions. But trust me, I'm a fucking pro. I did it. I seen it. I've been around it. There's nothing you're going to do that's fucking cooler than anything I fucking did. So you got to catch up to me. But you're learning from a pro. So just chill the fuck out. Know that this is bad, but it's up to you.
Now, the baby's a boy.
The baby's a boy. The girl is 3 and a half.
Now, here's the funny thing. Now, your daughter's 17. Your son's 14.
Mm-hmm.
Here's your son with three of his little Goombas watching you eating the girl's ass on stage and talking to
her. I high five the son, but the daughter's right, like, the, oh, that's it.
Right. Now, the boys are going to be in the room going, oh, shit, your dad's the shit.
Yeah.
Your dad was the shit. Where your daughter's going to be, you're so gross, dad. How, you know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah, that's yeah. But they're supposed to, but at least you're not a fucking accountant, which is great. But you guys are going to be on TV. You like they're like you're like eventually they're going to be like, where are the stars of death? Can you imagine? Like just to you, you guys are going to be. But it's but we live in California. It's going to be legal by then.
No,
oh my God, it's going to be good. But you're going to be forced to just be straight up honest. There's going to be no at a certain point. There's going to be no more sugarcoating stuff.
Kids fucking know, and they get insulted when you bullshit them.
They do.
Yeah,
I know a lot of kids that are fucking mad at their parents for something. I grew up with like three dudes that over the years I was like, what the fuck are you talking about?
You know what's funny? I think kids honestly are like any stand-up audience. They cut through the bullshit. They know when you're lying. You got to be up front. Other than, I mean, when you're on stage, you got to be funny. But there is a similarity, I believe, with children in the audience. They just know. They can sniff you out in a heartbeat. So you got to be honest. I think at least as a comic on stage and as a parent, you always have to be honest.
You really believe that you went to the coolest parties and shit?
I think so, yeah. When, I mean, I fucking...
When you were a comic or before you were a comic?
Oh, when I was a comic, yeah. I worked really? I did Beecher's Madhouse with Bill Burr, Robert Kelly, Dove Davidoff, all these guys out of New York. And Beecher used to have these shows in Vegas at the Hard Rock. So the show would be on Saturday. You know, he'd give you room, so you get in Wednesday and just part of the whole week. So when I first moved here, that's how I paid my rent. I lived in Vegas at the Hard Rock pretty much for 2 summers straight and into the spring and just collected that check. And we saw so – it was a blast. It was the fucking best. I was young. I was single. I was in my 20s or early 30s and just in Vegas.
This was 10 years best. Ago.
Yeah, late 20s actually. Yeah, it was the best. And then coming here and just hanging out with all those guys when I first moved here to L.A. And then obviously in New York City, being a stand-up in New York City, my first 7 or 8 years at the Comedy Cellar, you're going out every night. I mean, I wouldn't get home until 6 or 7 in the morning. It was the fucking – it was the greatest. The absolute fucking best.
What would you
best.
Do till 7 in the fucking morning?
Drink, hang out, try to meet girls, where girls at the go? Show.
Where would you leave the – what time do they close?
I mean, you know New
close?
York. You can – Cellar at that time – it was always Godfrey, Lampanelli, me, Artie Fuqua. We had the last 4 sets from 1 o'clock to 2 in the morning. So we always closed it out. And if you're there, you know, it's in the summer, New York City, NYU's right there, all those college kids. I'm just a few years older than them. They want to go out there. Fuck yeah, a tourist is in town. They've never been to the cell. They just saw Dave Chappelle. Now they see me on the same stage. And it's like, hey, I'm asking you to get it. Yeah, that's kind of cool. So it's like we had a fucking great run. A fucking great run.
7 in the morning.
7 in the morning. Yeah, always at the Waverly Diner. Godfrey and I would get some flapjacks and call it a night. That's the best.
I always wanted to live in New York. I'm happy with what I'm doing, but that's when I interned out here and I was going back to do my last semester in college. I thought I was going to go to New York. It just seemed so.
That's
cool.
Such a different. Listen, night lurking is a complete different world, and there was no better night lurker than I was. Now I'm scared to go out at night. Yeah. Like after like 11:30, I got to go home, dog. Bad shit happens.
Yeah.
But I used to lurk. I loved it. That's why I want to know what you, I mean, I did drugs till 8 in the morning.
Yeah.
You know, I watched Vinyl last night. Yeah, you know, Dice Clay plays this guy, and they give him a big Coke rock at the bar party. Mm. Listen, the phone rings 3 days later. He goes, dog, we're still up. That was me and my friend.
Yeah.
You're still up at a hotel room, you know, still up.
Yeah.
Three guys, 11,000 people have been through there. Women, you fucked women in there. They've left. One came back and blew your friend. You know, she brought
nobody's
blow.
Jealous.
What about the club he was walking into? He was walking, like, there were girls blowing guys in the bathroom.
This is correctly, you know, when I left New York City, for me, the day I got in that car, it wasn't like I cried or nothing, but I knew I was missing a great part of New York City. I left New York City before it ended. Like, I left the first time in April of 83. And then I came back and I caught that 85, 84 vibe-ish, which was still just superb, you know, where I understood what you're saying.
Yeah.
But I wasn't doing no fucking comedy, Jack. I was working, and, you know, you leave your house. In those days, you would go out at 10:30 because Miami Vice came on at 9. And between Miami 9 and 10, you got a package of Coke delivered to your house. You did a couple of lines, and at 10:30, you walk into the club with your new shoes and shit. But you didn't go to a club. You went to, like, a New Jersey club.
Right.
With all your fucking little idiot friends.
What's a New Jersey club?
Domenico's. Mary.
Domenico's. We've been going there since. We know the fucking bartender. We get the hookup. You go in there. You got a tab.
Is it just a bar?
Just a bar, maybe some food.
It's 1,000 bread ernsts.
But you're not going to eat. You're not going to eat. You're not eating there. You're doing packages. And also, like, at 2:30, you'd shoot into Manhattan. And we'd go to one of those fucking crazy clubs.
Yeah.
Now, let me see. I'll tell you what was crazy. On Thursday nights, I went with my friend Mike Askley's to Studio 54 one time. This was 1984. So all that Liza Minnelli shit was done. It was a different club. But I do remember snorting coke in the girls' bathroom, and it was fucking huge. Shit like that, and people fucking in the bathroom, and guys getting their dick sucked. I wasn't getting my dick sucked. I can tell you I didn't get my dick sucked. But where the fuck did I go that people getting their dick sucked and stuff like that?
The graveyard when you took a shit?
No.
The 1040 club.
The 1040 club, but that was with kids when I was 16 that took me to a fucking hookah house.
Not the 1040 one. What's the one where the guy, it's three floors? I was thinking about you. I thought that's what we were seeing.
Not Ramrod's was the gay bar, but then there was the other place. But there was, it was just a different, New York is very free. Like, I remember walking into, and the names of the block, but people had eight balls on the table. I could have been a cop.
Yeah.
The doorman just said, hey, clean your nose.
Yeah, it was fucking crazy. It was just a crazier time. And you'd see people on Monday. I remember my friend's mom's calling me. In 1987, my friend Anthony Sabatino, I get a call from his mom once a month. Coco, you talk to Anthony? He was on a plane to Vegas. I was hoping he's by you. You know? Because those people in New York would get 2-3 days of coke on them and go, what do you want to do? We're going to sit in a hotel room, fuck it, let's go to Miami. You know how many times my friends showed up in Colorado in those days?
Jesus.
Like, one time they showed up, I was in Boulder, and I got a call. I show up someplace, and this is a tremendous story. I get to my house, and they're like, hey, your friends are here. What are you talking about? They just called. They're at the airport. Call them at this number. I go all the way, 45-minute drive to the airport. Sure enough, they paid the guy to tell me not. They're at the strip club in Denver. I sent them out. I put them in a car. I get to the strip club. They got the whole table. They're fucking whacked. Foam's coming out of their noses.
Just, we're up in Jersey. We're like, let's go to Denver to see Coco.
Let's go to Denver. We went to the really good strip club. They rented a hotel across the street, like four fucking rooms connected.
Jesus.
Then we went back up there, and they bought champagne, and we're up there drinking, and three strippers came up. Then two of them got paranoid and gave me the coke, and we hit it in the wall and the tissue thing where the tissues come out of the wall. I'll never forget that, and they forgot which one it was. And Then we got up the next morning. They were straight. They're like, well, we're going back home. You could keep the coke. I'm like, you got to be fucking kidding me. We paid for the room till Friday, but we're going back.
Where did they get this money?
They were selling coke. And they would go on these binges, and they would fucking go for 3 or 4 goddamn days.
So they're trying to make money, but they were doing that much of it.
But they're good friends because they go, they're doing blow, and they go, we got to go see Joey.
Oh, my God.
We got to go see him now.
Can you believe this?
Go to Newark, and then they just fucking show up. That's the best.
Listen, the 80s, people showed up with no suitcases.
Yeah.
Do you understand, Millie? Do you know what it's like if I just call you and go, Steve Byrne, Cokes, what's going on? Nothing, Joey, what's up? Where are you? LAX. What are you talking about? I'm in LAX. I'm going to take an Uber. Listen, I got 2 ounces of coke on me. Call your friends. It's the best. It's from Noriega. It's left over. And you like, okay. And I'd show up and with this clothes.
Yeah.
Like 3 days. All I did was get up, take a shower, and put this clothes back on.
Yeah.
Snort coke, you know, smoke and airline fucking piss. And I'd buy clothes tomorrow, but tonight we party with the two. That's how fucking crazy they were. And I'd say, where were you guys? Well, we went from Philly to Atlantic City to fucking Connecticut, and then we flew out here. So how long you guys been going? Since Saturday. It's fucking Thursday. Have you guys slept? We slept on the plane for an hour. This asshole flushed the coke down the toilet. Thank God we got another shipment sent out to the hotel. It was craziness. And I'm sitting there going, oh, my God, this could have been me.
Now I get why you don't want to go to, like, the Hollywood parties. Like, it just, like, who go? Like, if Mercy ever wanted to go to, like, a Hollywood party one day, you'd be like, listen, my friends flew out with no suitcases for a week.
I've never been to a Hollywood party. When I got here, I think I went to one night to meet somebody. And I walked in, and there was a dude dancing with the wall. And I'm like, I don't need this in my life. And people were sitting there going, like, look at him. He's brilliant. And he was an actor. I'm not going to mention no names.
Yeah.
He was dancing with the wall, and people were like, oh, my God, he's gone now. I haven't seen him in a movie in 15 years. That was like a fucked up movie he was in or something. I forget what the kid's name was anyway. And that was it. That was my history of Hollywood parties.
Yeah.
They just weren't. I didn't. El Compadre is as crazy as I get. You ever go to El Compadre?
Yeah. That's so.
You see some crazy shit in there. Every night when I go to the store, I go, tonight I'm going to go over there and get a burrito.
Yeah.
I went about 3 weeks ago, but they got valet parking now. Fuck you. I used to run this back parking lot. You know what I'm saying? I used to be out here till 6 in the morning because that used to be a happening. When I first moved to L.A., that was a happening comedy neighborhood. It was Stanhope, DiPaolo, Mitch Hedberg, Josh Wolfe, Ralphie May. Everybody lived on those blocks, and then they would meet and play tennis. And it was craziness.
Yeah.
This is 97. But now they want valet parking at El Compadre. They can suck my dick. Fucking painful.
How about Jumbo's Clown Room? You do that?
Never.
Never?
Never.
That, I thought you would be a ringer for that. It's such a dive shithole, but it's so fun. And it's great. And it's all these girls are tatted up like suicide girls. And, you know, they're not the hottest, but they're really nice. And it's just like a fun vibe.
Are they naked?
I think they get shirtless. But every time I've been there, I've been just fucking
I've heard about that place. I heard about that place when I first moved
now,
here.
Do they do comedy there, Lee?
All I heard is it's kind of like a weird kind of a hit. It's like a hipster weird strip club.
Weird strip club. It's a really, really weird strip club. But it's called Jumbo's Clown Room, but there's no clowns or anything. I don't know why it's called that, but it's really fucking. And every time I've been there, I've been so drunk. Whoever I go with, I buy T-shirts for everybody. It's like, we got to remember this fucking night.
It sounds kind of like Cheetah, where Ari films his show, Cheetahs.
It's on Hollywood Boulevard, past Western, towards in between.
It's so funny, because anytime I wear my shirt, that's when guys, you'll be out, or like when I wore it on like the Sullivan Sunset, it was always the crew guys who was like, dude, I fucking love that place. It's like, it like brings the guys out of the woodwork that have ended up there and had a great night.
I've never really been a big strip club guy. I just went back after maybe 16 years.
Mm-hmm.
I got off the exit one night and went to this one up here by myself about a month ago. Tremendous.
Yeah.
I got one table dancing left. That's it. I drank a soda. She gave me a table dance. I came in my pants. I got in my car. I told my wife a couple of days later, she was giggling her ass off.
Yeah.
I can't do it. I was never really a big, let's go down and hang out. I get nervous.
Yeah.
I get really insecure. I get nervous. I give myself excuses not to be there.
I think they're going to hate you. I think the strippers must just hate everyone who walks in. I know they make money off of you, but...
They don't hate you. They're half a whores. You know, they got to have something in you to dabble in that fucking world.
I think, too, when you tell them you're a comic, it's almost like kindred spirits.
Right. We are kindred spirits.
Yeah.
Because this girl said to me, she goes, I just saw you at the store Wednesday night. How fucking crazy was that? It was great. It was fucking great.
That's a layup.
I walked in and walked out.
Yeah.
Got in my car and she ran to the door and she's like, come in. I just saw you at the store Wednesday night. What are you doing? We started talking.
Oh, that's great.
I go, what do you charge? I went up, looked at the menu. I went to the ATM and I gave it to her. I said, do your thing. It was great. And it was great. It wasn't like I was there out of desperation.
Right.
When I got divorced in 91, I went to the bus stop a couple of times. And I met a girl one night at Denny's and nothing really happened. Mm-hmm. We were going to do stuff. And then she went, we were going to go on a date. And the chick I was divorcing, this stripper went to get a haircut on the hill where my wife cut hair. Mm-hmm. And sat in the chair. And my wife's like, why you need a haircut? And she goes, I'm going on a date with a comedian tonight, Joey Diaz. Can you believe that? All the fucking places to put yourself
God. In. For your guys' first date?
She was going to go see, man. I was going to take her to dinner. She was going to go see me host at the Broker.
So she canceled the date?
Fuck yeah. My wife threw her out of the chair.
Cancel the date. Cancel the wedding. The marriage.
It was fucking crazy, these guys.
Jesus.
You know what, man? We threw a fucking wrench in here. The special. What the fuck? So the last special you shot in Chicago, not Zanies.
Not Zanies, no. 2 weeks ago did it. And we were talking about this before the show. Because I think sometimes when comics film an hour, they film it in front of, you know, the Chicago theater. It's like 3,000, 3,500 people. Or like somebody will go to an arena. And I don't think... You hear laughs. You hear like noise. And I thought, you watch Sarah Silverman, like she always does it kind of in an intimate space. And I thought, I'm going to do that. I'm going to find something that's not too small because hers are like 7,500 people. But this was a few hundred people. And we did it at this place called Lincoln Hall in Chicago. It's fucking awesome. Really, really great.
How many people?
I think 300-400 people.
That's all you need, Steve Byrne. I got to do a showcase next Wednesday, Steve Byrne.
Yeah.
I'm having a big problem with this. It's at the Comedy Store Main Room.
Oh, you thinking of filming it there?
No. I got to do a showcase next weekend for a couple different people.
Oh, I got you.
And the people who set it up said, let's do the main room. And I didn't realize it until I went to the store the other night. I don't want to do a showcase in the main room.
Go to the OR.
That's what I'm saying.
With a belly, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to cancel it for next Wednesday.
Tell them to see you in the OR.
First of all,
they won't move it for you?
Listen, when I moved to LA and you sign with an agency, once a year you would get a call in like October. Mm-hmm. And your agent would put me, Steve Byrne, you know, Sebastian, Bobby Lee at the Improv. And your agency gave out pieces of paper with your name and your picture and what you did and what you want to do. And you went up and they said, and it was 20 minutes, 15 minutes. These guys want me to do an hour.
An hour in the main room?
Yeah. And I'm like, I don't want to do an hour.
Do an hour on the belly. You'll pack it in. It'll be crammed. It's just what you want. And have them see you there. Adam will do that for you in a heartbeat.
Move it to the
main room. You want to do that on like a Saturday. That's, you know,
but not even if you filled it up, right? Because you've been back for a couple of years. You've only done the main room like when I've been there 2 or 3 times.
Oh, I ate death in there again last night just to confirm it. I'm an OR guy. You know what I'm saying?
I'm an OR guy.
And you are what the fuck you are.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, just so you don't get put in a monkey wrench, you say, fuck it, I'll do the main room on a Sunday or a Monday.
Yeah.
It's hockey night, whatever the fuck it is. And you go in there and you're okay. But if you've been training in the original room, your timing's kind of off. Especially the guy, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Unless you're like a slow storyteller with a suit on. Bop, 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 the fucking main room works. I'm an animal. You know, I got no class. But I know this going in, Steve Byrne. The original room is where you go when you got no class. Somewhere along the line, you fought.
Hey, no.
Yeah.
Hey, no.
Hey, no.
Hey, no.
The original room is the master of no class.
Yeah.
Because you'll see it, and that's what turns to the original room. is a magical room. You and I, you could go home at night.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Like, especially when you go on a Wednesday night and there's $120 in there and you have a mediocre set, but the two jokes you were writing
yeah.
worked. How do you go home? What do you feel?
You say, I can't wait to go back Thursday.
It's
the greatest.
It's $15.
Yeah.
But you want to go back Thursday.
Yeah.
Like, you could do 1,000 things. You could work at Walmart and make more fucking money than 50. It's such a fucking, when I get home sometimes from the Comedy Store and I'm sitting there, sometimes I go watch Sons of Anarchy to calm down. I'm like, this ain't
that's,
Dick.
That's your cool down?
This ain't Dick. I'm fucking crazy than these fucking guys riding motorcycles. We were just at the Comedy Store, original room.
Nothing better than the OR. Because the OR, it's the one, like, no matter what you say, no matter what kind of, it doesn't matter how far you go, you are accepted, warts and all, in the OR, period. Amongst that crowd, in that room, it's the best.
And when your timing's in there, oh my God. It's when your timing is on one of those nights where all the stars are aligned.
Yeah.
And they get aligned from time to time in certain rooms. You lift your own spirits up to go into that room. You know the way the Bacoust, you know, Zany's, the other one by the airport. That's Papa's room right there, Jack.
Yeah.
That's my world right there. Zany's downtown, I love it, but it brings me back to prison. You know what I'm saying? I'm doing a prison show. It's too... For some reason, my timing don't work in there.
You know, I'll tell you this. This might sound weird, but, you know, when I had that show on the air, Sullivan and Son, it was so fun doing it. But the few times I've ever felt like a superstar, it was on a Tuesday night in the OR after a killer set. And you're just like, fuck, that's why I got into this.
You get in your car, you tip Doc Double.
Oh, yeah.
Doc Double.
Go get yourself a carny dog. Get the fuck out of my face. I'm out of here. Boom. Yeah.
I'm getting 15, but I'm giving you a 50. That's how good I do.
Let me take my time on the way out so I don't hit Cork McCowan's motorcycle over, but then I'm going to fucking lay a patch out of here. I
fuck
did it.
Yeah.
Victory lap.
And you're going to make a left on Sunset to prove your point. Fuck it. There ain't no biker cops out. It's
right.
Tuesday night, motherfucker.
It's fucking great.
Really is. It really – oh, my God. I love Tuesdays and Wednesdays when you go up there with – you got 15 minutes and you go up there with 7 minutes of material that you have and eight that you had just been thinking about that morning.
Yeah.
And you remember to write down.
No, it seemed like you didn't really want to do an hour. Would you rather do like a 15 or 20 minute set?
Oh, my God. To do an hour in front of industry.
Oh, the worst.
On a Wednesday night, Lee, is the worst. You always want to leave wanting more. When I go to Chicago or Steve Byrne goes to Pittsburgh, we do 50 fucking minutes. It's fun. After you've been there two or three times, you get local references that you – or now you get to know it or you get – you know what I'm saying? Like I did this joke in Buffalo. It's my favorite joke that I've written ever. It's the dumbest joke in the world. That when you call – you know, you ever trying to fly into Buffalo, you call the airlines and they're always like, really? Like they're always like, I always love that about Buffalo.
Yeah.
And Buffalo loves it.
Yeah.
Buffalo is the only city when you call American Airlines and go, I want to go to Buffalo. Like, listen, you don't want to go to Buffalo. Stupid shit that they like. You know what I'm saying?
It's great, though, yeah.
It's stupid shit. But after you've been there two or three times, you get to know things. When you're on, like a Thursday night in there, and then Saturday comes on, that's a great feeling.
Yeah.
You go back to the hotel room, you got a check in your pocket, and you just let them fucking know what the fuck was going on in your heart. Even the 7:30 show, which I'm 50%. I eat death on the 7:30 shows on a Saturday night. I'm the king of those things. So I know it going in.
Yeah.
So I make like a B list of all jokes I want to try, the offensive as shit, just to get it out of the way. And I pack them in there like every 6 minutes. Then I pack them in a little heavier towards the end.
Yeah.
Sometimes you wins, and sometimes you don't. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes the words are very important. That's really good that you're smart when it comes to this special. That's why I wanted to talk to you about it. I failed.
No,
I completely failed. Completely failed. Material wise, timing wise, I don't think I could do a 50-minute special.
Oh, are you kidding me? You kidding? Yeah. No.
Because I have to do the material in such a way that I really have an hour and 10 of material to do in 50 because of how quick I want to unleash it on you.
Right.
You You know, when I come out there, especially at the, I learned it at the Comedy Store. Listen, lesson number one, if you're a comedian, you go to the Comedy Store. Why? And this is the only thing I could ever add to you. When you're at the Comedy Store from Thursday to Sunday night, you got to bring it the first three fucking minutes. Especially if Mitzi was lurking.
Yeah.
If Mitzi was lurking, you had three fucking minutes.
To kill.
Because that bitch could be having a conversation in the main room. And she would have this ear zoned into the original room. And she would tell you.
Yeah.
You'd walk back there and she'd go, come here. How'd you do? Not too good. That stupid junk didn't work. God damn it.
Yeah.
How'd you know? Dog, it was fucking crazy. So that style that I had to jump on people was from bombing.
Yeah.
I bombed so bad behind Dom Herrera. I bombed so bad for so long behind Paul Mooney that I go, this is the only way I can learn to grab the audience. Mm-hmm. Just by grabbing them, you know. Keep it going for Steve Byrne. What the fuck is going on with you, cocksucker? I'm not going to do nothing, Steve Byrne. You go up there and start dilly-down after a really good act.
Yeah.
And you're just sinking. The clock is on. You're sinking. You're up there playing around, and all of a sudden, you lose them on the four-minute mark at the Comedy Store original room on a fucking Wednesday night or a Thursday. You're done.
Yeah.
There's no, and I've done it. That's why I know from experience.
I've done it plenty.
Well, that I kind of miss because you don't really bring me to the store anymore because like we've talked about it, even working. I kind of like those are my favorite. When you go and it's like if like eight, it seems like 8 minutes. It's just you don't stop laughing. I know people get tired, but like, I would love to see like how long do you think you could do a special of just that and then just put that out? It's the internet.
Well, what you would do is the way I would do it was open up like that strong for like 7 minutes, bring them back to normal. Then you got to go on another rant, which is what Bill Burr does brilliantly.
Right.
Bill Burr does it, is the king of that. He does it the best you've ever seen ever right now at this point.
Yeah.
He goes on a fucking six-minute rant, calms you down for four, finger bangs you for three, and then takes you right back to that fucking place for 8 or 9 minutes. Now he pushes a little more. Watch his style. He's brilliant at doing it. So the first rant, six. The second is nine. Mm-hmm. Then that third one, he takes you into deep waters. You know, I forget the one bit he did on the, you know, he just takes you into that 12 minutes. Then he seems to wrap it together and he gets the fuck out of there. Mm-hmm. So I got nothing against that. That's a beautiful fucking, that's a beautiful
system.
Not system. Say the word for me, Steve Burnham.
Just the ebbs and flows of his. Of his orchestration, I guess, of the duration of time that he's on stage. He really does know how to hit the beats. He knows how to hit you out of the gates, and then he knows how to close. He's just – I agree with you. I think he's the best. He was always a guy – when I started in New York, you know, if I was a freshman, Bill was like a sophomore or junior, and then Colin Quinn, Norton, Voss, Patrice, Geraldo, those guys were all like the seniors at the Comedy Cellar. But I always thought Burr was my favorite, and I've told him this many times, and he knows this. When we used to work at Dangerfields all the time, like, man, you're my fucking favorite comic. And, you know, I'm just a few years younger than him, but I always looked up to him. I still do. I think he's just fucking great. He's brilliant, and he's a great guy, too.
While you brought it up, I got to ask you, next time I go to New York, should I work Dangerfields? Never done it. 10 people have tweeted me and said, Joey, you gotta kill go to Dangerfield.
Saturday, Dangerfields, you'd kill it. You'd fucking mop them up. But I would do it once just to say you did it. Because we, you know, you saw those HBO specials. It's cool. It's still rotary phones, same carpet, same green room, same couches, same furniture, a lot of history. But I don't know. The Cellar's the Cellar.
No, that's the Mac Daddy of Mac Daddy's. Yeah. But
you should do it. You would kill. Kill.
Did you used to do it on Tuesday nights and stuff like that?
Oh, God. Tuesdays in front of four people.
How brutal.
Bombing. I mean, just straight up fucking bombing, questioning. Is this the right move for me? Should I do – because Dangerfield's the sponsor, half hour. So yeah, half hour, dark room, one light. That's it. And it's four people. Two are in the back making out. Another two are just so bombed they're not even listening and just talk. It's the worst of the worst, but it makes you accept failure so much quicker than any other club I've ever been in.
I did a 9-month term in New York City. What a lot of people don't know is I did a 9-month bit of comedy in New York City from January of 93 mm-hmm. to maybe November of 93. I drove a limo. I lived in Fort Lee. I took a bus into the city in the mornings. I saw cars on 11th Avenue. I mean, and I went to all those comedy spots. And New York broke me as a comic.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie to you guys. I could tell you any other story. I took a stand-up comedy class there just to reinforce me. I used to do the New York Comedy Club, stand-up New York. Jesus. Oh, yeah, yeah. I was, like, in debt. But it was my second year of comedy.
Yeah.
I didn't really know what I was doing, and these guys were putting me up if I showed up with five guys. So I always had my buddies. All they needed was an invite, you know.
Yeah.
All my buddies needed was somebody to fucking invite them to a club. And they'd show up, and they'd back me, and I kept going and going and going. But there was that other side that I didn't. In L.A., there were coffee shops when I first came there. Mm-hmm. In New York, there were these fucking seedy places, and there was one in particular that broke me, Steve Byrne.
Yeah.
Yale Triple N.
Oh, God, yeah. I know where that is.
The open mic started at 12 at midnight. Was that still around? Tell me that's still there.
Yeah, it's still there. Yale Triple N is still around. I don't know if they still do the open mic. I've done comedy there, and I know exactly what you're fucking talking about. So, yeah, that's
That place broke me. Like, that broke my soul.
Yeah.
What is it?
It's just a shitty pub. It's a dive kind of bar. But I remember because it was the Cellar, then Boston, and then just a few blocks away is Yale Triple N. And so the guys that couldn't pass at the Cellar decided, let's put the show together, and everybody that was in between spots would go over there, and it was, yeah, it was eating death.
But I used to go there at 12 and sign up, and your spot would be at, like, you know, 138th.
Yeah.
And people would come in and bump you when I couldn't say nothing.
Yeah.
And I was driving a limo, and I had a gram of blow in my pocket, and I was dying to do it, but I would not do it until I did my three fucking minutes.
Yeah.
You know? And it was just so humiliating to me. Like, I wanted to do comedy so bad. Like, I was fucking counting on it, Steeper.
Yeah.
You know? And I went there one night and I died. Died. Like, I thought I had this brilliance, you know?
Yeah.
This fucking, the guardian angels are back. Time to put your Bose speakers back in the windows. Like, I just wrote this garbage. And I went up there. That was one of the jokes. I'm serious.
Yeah.
That was one of the jokes I wrote. Guardian angels are back in New York. Time to put your Bose speakers back in the windows. You know, that got a boo, right? That got a fucking quick boo. And then something happened one night. I ate death. Then I went back and I ate death again. And I'm like, I don't know about this. I think I'm just going to sell coke. Mm-hmm. And then I went back again. And Leguizamo was in there. And I go, I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah.
And people are like, you're not going up. He's doing something. And I watched him for 8 minutes. It was okay. Mm-hmm. You know what he was doing? There was eight people in the audience.
Yeah.
And he was doing it like there was 300.
Right.
And I go, okay, I get it. I got to move to a different place, do comedy, and I'll get to this level.
Yeah.
Once I saw that, that broke me.
Yeah.
The behavior, how people treated me at the what's the guy that died? Leukemia guy over at fucking...
Oh, Lucian?
Lucian, whatever. That club, they just embarrassed the fuck out of me. They might as well fuck me in the ass at that age and put a dick in my mouth. It was fucking humiliating.
What did they do?
Just they treated you like shit, you know, when you weren't...
if you're not part of the club.
Oh, my God. You have no fucking idea. When you went in there, they looked at you like if you were there to rob the place, you know, and... You had to sell tickets on the streets. I did it all, man.
Yeah.
Well, wasn't Mitzi the same way?
It was a different, you know, and it's the level I was at also. Nobody talks to nobody when you suck dick. You know, nobody talks to you when you suck ass on stage. They talk to you fucking once you start picking up momentum. So by the time I got to the store, I had known people. I had done comedy for a while. It was a different fucking game, you know. So it all panned out. I had been doing comedy 7 years when I walked into the store. When I walked into the old Triple N, I'd been doing comedy 18 months.
Yeah.
And I'd been on stage 13 times. Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I had a business card that said comedian.
Yeah.
I didn't know the fucking game, Steve Byrne, you know. Like I told you before, man, I was watching at that store that night. You were having a great set. You brought me up. And I said, this motherfucker... There's three people in the business that there was two for a long time. And then I saw you that night, and I really, you sucked me in. And it was like, I laughed, but I felt warm inside. Like I had watched Bonanza. It was like one of those things. Remember when you were a kid and you watched those good American wholesome shows? Like that was what was watching you. You weren't dirty that night.
Yeah.
You were not dirty that night. You know, you said, fuck, but not dirty. Yeah. You know, there's a difference between going up there and going, I ate her asshole.
Yeah.
Than saying, I got caught in fucking traffic today. And it defends your face and the whole thing. And I'm thinking, I'm like Pablo in 2000, you know, in all the years when he was whacked and stuff. Those were I used to see people leave there crying. It was like they went to Disneyland.
Yeah.
That's the best I could describe it. And you have that quality, man.
Oh, thanks, man.
And you're a bad motherfucker.
I appreciate it, Joey.
I know you got to go.
Yeah. My wife was texting me, so
no,
I got to.
Go ahead.
I gotta
do your thing. We'll
I love you, boys.
I love you guys.
Thank you so much.
You have any dates coming up?
Love you, bud.
Love you very
much. I'm in Aspen this weekend, and then I don't know. I'm just taking a little bit of time off because I just filmed that special. It'll be coming out soon, and just going to lay low for a bit and get my gears going. But you inspired me tonight to think I got to get back to the store real soon and get back up there and start writing again. So thank you, bud.
I'll see you down there, my
all right.
Thank you very much for doing the show too, right?
I'm sorry? You have a podcast too?
I have a podcast with Gary Cannon called The Gentleman's Dojo. So it's just new and starting. Once I get the wheels going, I'd love to have you on.
All right.
So,
Say my best to Gary Cannon. Right. He's a good man, bro.
Love you, boys.
Let me give some shout outs here real quick and we'll get the fuck out of here, Lee. I didn't even know what time it was. We're running late, man. Lee, you're supposed to be navigating this motherfucker.
I didn't know we had an outside.
You want to eat a brownie, Lee?
I have another star.
You have another star? I got to work tomorrow. So I got to be on the fucking straight and narrow.
What does that mean in reality, though?
In reality, it means I can only eat like, I don't know. In reality, it means I got to. Tell me I'm about fucking glasses today. All right, let me give some shout outs here. We'll get the fuck out of here. DJ Diggs, Ookie Spooky, MIQ Tweets, Chris Deep, Renegades of Skunk, Connor is God, Pat House is back in town, Eddie B, and Matt Baltazar, you bad motherfucker. This Friday, the South Point, 220, I don't know about 224, we might have to change that. But listen, my friend, one of my best friends in life is having a show this Saturday. And the second show is already fucking sold out. I just want to give him a plug on this because I love him to death. My main man, Felipe Esparza, is at Nokia Theater. If you want to go to the early show with the wife. Oh, you're with me.
I'm in Vegas.
That's right. You'll be wiggling your ass.
I could send the wife.
You want to send the wife? She'll go?
I could ask her. Yeah. Yeah, she loves her mom doesn't like the vegan thing, but her mom loves Felipe. So.
You know what? Felipe's wife is pregnant, so.
Oh, congrats.
Yeah, so go down there. Send the wife down there. Tell grandmother to make a scarf with a, can send like a saint's eyeball or some shit in that fucking thing and put the good maluka.
I didn't know that. That's really cool.
Yeah, I don't even know if I should be saying it.
But I think they have a podcast.
Yeah, they have a podcast together. They said it. So it's a beautiful fucking thing, bro. How was your week last week? Good? Everything good in your world?
I had a great weekend. You made fun of me, but we went to In-N-Out. I have like.
How good was it?
Oh, my God. I haven't had In-N-Out forever. But it was.
How long was the line?
You know, we went like we kind of messed up. We went a little bit later, like 9 o'clock. It still took like 10 minutes, probably. But like it's pretty cool how like I even asked her a couple times. I'm like, are you sure? Because you said stout. Like, why didn't you go to stout? And I even brought up stout, but she just loves. She's from here. She just loves In-N-Out, and we had a great time.
Let's go over here, by the old office.
Yeah. Yeah, when they're really high. Oh, I have a good tip because I'm always afraid that I'm going to lose it when I'm stoned. Like I'll start giggling and show myself. So I started listening to comedy albums when I'm driving. So that way people don't know. That's how paranoid I get.
Look at you. Look at you and shit.
But, for next year for people, I sent my mom flowers. And she's been talking about it like every day. Like it's crazy. I've been telling people like for the last few days, I always say have a good day to people like at stores because that's when I work there. And I start saying happy Valentine's Day. And girls just lit up. It's like what you said, like making people's day. Just saying happy Valentine's Day. And I sent my mom flowers and she's been talking about it for like months. So next year, guys.
I had a fucked up weekend because I went to sleep Friday night. I got home from work and I won.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so I didn't fall asleep till 3:30. So I got up at 7 with Mercy. You know, and I had Mercy the whole morning, blah, 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 blah. We had to run around. And then we probably got home at 2 with Mercy. I took a nap till like 5. So I didn't even get a chance to, I got her a card. That was it.
But, felt but they bad, don't need much.
I should have got it.
It's so made
else.
Up.
Who gives a fuck? You know, women like when you make an effort.
But yeah, but you got the card though.
It was a fucking car with a thing that spun around.
Yeah, but then I spent fucking tons on flowers for Paula, and I was like, it was tiny.
I can't get fucking flowers because of the cats.
Oh, I know, but that's my point. Then it's stupid. So I mean, get chocolate or something, but.
Yeah, we were going to go out to eat today, and then Mercy didn't fall asleep, and we took it to jiu-jitsu, which was fucking tremendous. When they gave her the gi, she looked fucking tremendous.
Did they give her a little belt, too?
Yeah, she had the whole fucking thing on. You know, it was at 3:30. I could take it to there on Mondays, you know, but she's also tired. So she wouldn't sit down. She was dancing around like a fucking ballerina. And after 10 minutes, I had to pick her up, and she got hotter and shit. Then she started yelling and screaming. Then we had to fucking take the gi off and take her home. Then my wife yelled at me, and I yelled at my wife. Then we fucking went home, and we played with it, and everything went back to normal. And she still didn't fucking nap.
She doesn't need to nap.
No, man. She's supposed to fucking nap at 1 o'clock.
No, that's what I'm saying. She's just, like, full energy.
She's fucking got to nap. I stopped napping, and it fucking destroyed me. I didn't go back to napping until I was 25 years old. When I dated the stripper, she used to make me take a nap in the afternoons when I was 30 fucking years old. I never napped in my fucking life. I stopped napping when I was like 4. I was running around with my mom as a kid. I had no time to fucking nap.
My dad took naps my entire life. Like, it was known in my house, like, to be quiet.
Yeah, because he worked nights.
Yeah.
You have to take a nap if you work nights.
And you work nights.
Well, not really. Because some
nights.
What do
you mean, not really?
Some nights I work and I get home at 10:30. That's not working nights. And some nights I get home at 11:30 or 12. You know, over the years, the fucking clock is short. When I first got here 15 years ago, yeah, I walked in the door at fucking 2 or 3 o'clock every night. That's terrible.
What about walking in like Steve Burns, 6 o'clock? Can you imagine that?
But that's New York City. You can
Is that really just New York? You can do it? I can't imagine being out that late here.
In 1985, 84, I was staying out a minimum till, because I like the food. I like the pizza over there in the middle of the night.
In New York?
Yeah, I liked it. So I used to go to different spots and get 2-3 slices with a soda and take a meatball hero home. And by the time you get home, you smoke dope in a fucking car and you smoke another and you eat another meatball hero. I liked all that shit, dog. So I could see, and I did blow till late night too. I don't know. It's just been like it's been so long since I stayed up till 6 in the fucking morning.
How bad is some of that late night pizza? I got some of the worst in New York at like 5 in the morning when I was waiting for a bus.
No, I knew where to fucking go. You know, your friends tell you where to go, different spots, and you realize where to go, and then you start going there, you know. For me, it had to be good and easy to get there. I'm not going all the way to, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not going all the way to the Bronx at 2 in the morning for a slice. There's got to be a place in Manhattan. And my friends always found a place. For years, there was a good spot over on 15th Street by 8th Avenue by the Honda place in Manhattan. That's long gone. These places are long gone. Like, I don't know nothing about fucking those cities no more. I don't even know where to fucking get pizza here. I got to go to the fucking mall like a Gentile in fucking some small city. I got to live in Los Angeles. I got to go to Joe's Pizza and fucking whatever.
Yeah,
that stout burger. You can only eat a stout burger once a month.
Yeah,
that should have fucking killed you. It's delicious. It's
good.
But okay, they're huge. I love those fucking things.
But they're not that big. Like they're
not that big. But it's the fucking onion rings and the french fries with the cheese that destroy you. And the beer. You know, who the fuck am I to drink a beer that one day? I was dizzy for 4 days.
You don't like beer?
I love fucking beer. What do you think I drank it for? But how many times did you see me drink a beer in 5 years?
Maybe 2 more times?
That's it. When the fuck do I drink a beer? I'd love to drink a beer more often. But I got to drive. I got to walk around. I got to do different shit. That night, that afternoon, my wife was driving. So I don't give a fuck. What's a beer? You know, I'm the co-pilot. Where's the sheets of paper? You give them back to me? It was nice to have Steve Brennan here. He's a fucking good dude, man.
It is very nice. He's
No. And I was going to get him in here before the fucking special. And you know what, man? I miscalculated the fucking the timing. So I felt really bad. I wanted to get him in here to promote the fucking special. Sometimes you can't do everything. Like my man Lee said, I've been used. Listen, MeUndies and me have been fucking around for like 2 years now. And I got to tell you something. I wear them before every workout. I wear them before when I finally get, like right now, I have no underwear on. What the fuck? I need underwear to walk down here. I'll be home in an hour or two. What do I need underwear for? But if I'm flying, if I'm trying to be an American, if I got to act like, you know, I know what the fuck's crack-a-lacking, I got to wear MeUndies. This is the shit I've been wearing. I don't wear cotton underwear no more. They creep up my ass. They slip. So whether you're wearing a suit or sweats, you spend almost 24 hours a day in your underwear. But instead of making a statement like Superman's tights under his everyday clothes, your underwear probably fucking boring, right? Well, listen. MeUndies, they're here to change that shit. You know why? Let me tell you why, Lee. Because I got a product called Modal. Every pair of MeUndies is made from sustainable source Modal, a fabric that's twice as soft as cotton. All their underwear, bro, and they last, too. That's the other thing. Usually when I have cotton fucking underwear, my fat ass stretches out, my nutsack drips. These black MeUndies and the camouflage ones I got are the older ones. And whenever I put them on, those things are fucking tight. That Modal is fucking solid. You understand me? Nothing can describe the fit and feel of MeUndies. But once you try them on, you'll understand why they're called the world's most comfortable underwear. And if you don't love the first pair of MeUndies, they're free. No questions asked. And if Uncle Joey likes them, I'm telling you, I never liked underwear. Since fucking 1981, I was like, why do you need fucking underwear for? I fucking hated them. And if you don't, I swear to God, MeUndies is different styles and limited edition prints to help you make a statement with your underwear, right? Whether anyone can see them or not, remember, it's fucking Superman. You got nice undies, you walk with confidence, you take them off in front of your girlfriend. Let's say you meet some freak at a bar, she wants to lick your nutsack, and you got your little MeUndies on, but bam, here it is. Shipping is free in the U.S. and Canada, and you can save up to $8 a pair with the MeUndies subscription plan. So do yourself a favor. Go to subscription of single pair and get 20% off your first order when you go to MeUndies.com. Either the subscription or the single pair. That's MeUndies.com. For 20% off your first order.
MeUndies.com/Joey.
Yeah, MeUndies.com/Joey for 20% off your first order. Right, so don't mess with me. It's a new year. Valentine's Day, you're single. You want to spruce up your shit. Go to MeUndies. Next year, I guarantee you'll have 10 girlfriends. Because your underwear will smell good, your nutsack, the whole fucking thing. Trust me, I'm no male model. But when I sling dick with MeUndies. You understand me? Who's better than Lisa Ayat tonight?
MeUndies needs to make that shirt.
How many stars you need tonight? You want to eat a brownie too?
I have had three. I'm good with the brownie.
What? You're three. You're in training. This is it. This is.
I'm fully trained.
This is Israel week. You got to go deep in shit. Let me tell you what company I keep hearing good and better things about. And I got to get them to send me more food. This fucking Blue Apron. You know why? Let me tell you what the menu was for this week. Chicken schnitzel, that's what you call it?
Schnitzel.
Schnitzel with fingerloin potato salad. Center cut pork chops with warm beets. That's a two-person plan. The family pan is pink ricotta with meatballs and creamy polenta and sweet and sour cod with carrot, ginger, fucking fried rice. Who's better than that? You can admit it. The last thing anybody wants to do after work is go wait online at a grocery store, schlep home, cook a complicated meal. And it's expensive. Unhealthy takeout is even hardly better. That's where the new service Blue Apron comes in, all right? Blue Apron delivers farm-fresh ingredients and a step-by-step recipe to your home, allowing you to create the healthy, handcrafted meal at home without going to the grocery store. Dog, you walk out your door and there's a box. For less than $10 per meal, Blue Apron sends you fresh ingredients, whether it's the fish, the meat, the pork chops, perfectly proportioned, making cooking healthy meals really easy and fun. No trips to the grocery store and no waste from unused ingredients. Plus, you'll learn to cook with specialty ingredients that are normally hard to find. Blue Apron is perfect for date night, cooking with friends, and they even offer family plans with kid-friendly ingredients so the whole family can eat well and have fun preparing meals together. Each balanced meal is 500 to 700 calories per serving and so tasty you'll never know it. Cooking takes half an hour, shipping is flexible and free, and the menus are always new. They won't send you the same mail twice. They work around your schedule and dietary preferences, and Blue Apron experts source only the best seasonal ingredients for meals like the one I talked about, like the schnitzel or the center cut pork chops. You'll cook incredible meals and be blown away by the quality and the freshness, all right? Blue Apron, it's the better way to cook. You get home, you got no drama. There's a box. You take it out of the box. You put, just like they tell you, you read off a card. A fucking Momo could do this. You understand me? With one eye. This is why this is good. You come home, you work hard, less than $10. You do the two-family plan, whatever the hell. You want to eat more? You're a fat fuck. You want to lose weight? This is the way to do it. BlueApron.com/Joey. My treat, really. The first two meals are on me. When you go to blueapron.com/Joey, all right? And as usual, my main people on it. I'm back on the shroom tech fucking sport. I go to jiu-jitsu. I get home. My fucking gi is drenched. Even the knee pads now are fucking drenched. I have to suck 20 dicks on the street to get my knee pads that fucking sweaty. That, and I'm telling you, I'm dropping weight now. I'm feeling healthier. I'm moving better. I'm lasting more on the mats. Today, I did a fucking sweep on a young kid. It's working, Lee. Little by little, I'm getting better, better, and better. But the shroom tech sport took me the last two fucking weeks. And the immune, ever since I fucking travel, you know, you got this fucking new kiwi fucking disease going around. Mosquitoes biting your kids, born with fucked up heads.
Really?
Yeah, there's a new fucking thing going around. I don't know the name of it. Somebody fucking sent me a picture the other day of these poor kids and shit. It's white pregnant woman and shit.
Oh, I think I heard about that.
Yeah, what the fuck? What are you living on? In a closet? What the fuck is the picture here? See? I don't fucking see.
It's okay.
Let me tell you something. These fucking iPhones, dog, they don't save shit. They fucking lose my emails. I got to put them on an iCloud. I don't know about my fucking iCloud, dog. What the fuck? When do they come with all these by the ways all of a fucking sudden?
So they can track you. Really.
Why do I need somebody fucking tracking me?
You don't.
I got to lock my numbers in. I got to do 1,000 things. Leave me the fuck alone. They're worse than the LinkedIn people.
Those people,
when are they going to stop sending me friend requests?
Who?
If you're on LinkedIn, then don't bother me no more. Every morning I wake up, everybody wants to be my friend on LinkedIn.
They're not bothering you. LinkedIn is making them send emails.
I refuse to give anybody even the opportunity. I'm so pissed off at LinkedIn because it's bullshit. There's people walking around the streets going, oh, I'm part of a business network. No, you're not. Nobody gives a fuck that you're on there.
No one gives a fuck about. Yeah, but yeah. So, but they're not emailing you. They'll friend you once, but then LinkedIn will send you requests for 18 years until you accept it. So yeah, I'm thinking about just getting a flip phone next time.
What are you bothering me for? Anyway,
why don't you just get it?
I'm gonna be at the stop point. What are you bothering? What do you work for? Apple or something? Listen, Listen, this Friday and Saturday, I'll be at the South Point Casino. If you ain't doing nothing, Vegas is the place to be. Not because I'm jumping up and down. You know me. I have one drink. I fucking puking. But if you're not doing nothing Friday and Saturday, Lee will be there eating cake and shit. Next week, I'm at the Comedy Store to see if we put this together. And don't forget to go see my main man, Felipe Esparza, at the Nokia Theater, Saturday night, early show, 7:30. All right? I love you, motherfuckers. See you Wednesday. Stay black. And beautiful, you sexy motherfuckers.
And please check out Life in Neutral.
That's right. I'm going to Periscope here in a second, so get your life together.
This show is brought to you by MeUndies. Shipping is always free in the U.S. and Canada, and you can save up to $8 a pair with MeUndies subscription plan. Get the subscription or a single pair. Get 20% off your first order when you go to MeUndies.com/Joey. That's MeUndies.com/Joey. Show is also brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron sends gourmet recipes and all the fresh ingredients you need to make them right to your door. Our listeners get their first 2 meals for free. Just go to blueapron.com/Joey and start cooking incredible meals at home with Blue Apron. Blueapron.com/Joey and go to onnit.com and use code word CHURCH to get 10% off all their great optimization products.